Nivritta,
Nivritta.
Released from.
Tarshahai.
Lust or material activities.
Ubagiyamanat.
Which is described or sung.
Baba Oshadat.
Which is the right medicine for the material disease.
Shrotra.
The process of oral reception.
Manaha.
The subject matter of thought for the mind.
Abiramat.
From the pleasing vibrations from such glorification.
Kaha.
Who?
Uttama Shloka.
Of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Guna Anuvadat.
From describing such activities.
Puman.
A person.
Virajita.
Can keep himself aloof.
Vina.
Except.
Pashugnat.
Either a butcher
or
one who is killing
his own personal existence.
So in translation, glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is performed in the Parampara system, that is, it is conveyed from spiritual master to disciple. Such glorification is relished by those no longer interested in the false temporary glorification of this cosmic manifestation. Descriptions of the Lord are the right medicine for the conditioned soul undergoing repeated birth and death. Therefore, who will cease hearing such glorification of the Lord except a butcher or one who is killing his own self? So you can repeat. Glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead
is performed in the Parampara system.
That is, it is conveyed
from spiritual master to disciple.
Such glorification is relished
by those no longer interested
in the false temporary glorification
of this cosmic manifestation.
Descriptions of the Lord
are the right medicine
for the conditioned soul
undergoing repeated birth and death.
Therefore, who will cease such hearing?
Such glorification of the Lord,
except a butcher
or one who is killing his own self.
So, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami.
Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Jai.
In India, it is the practice among the general populace to hear about Krishna either from Bhagavad Gita or from Srimad Bhagavatam in order to gain relief from the disease, repeated birth and death. Although India has now fallen, when there is a message that someone will speak about Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, thousands of people still gather to hear. This verse indicates, however, that such recitation of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam must be done by persons completely freed from material desires. Nivritta Tarshahai. Everyone within this material world, beginning from Brahma down to the insignificant ant, is full of material desires for sense enjoyment, and everyone is busy in sense gratification. But when thus engaged, one cannot fully understand the value of Krishna Katha, either in the form of Bhagavad Gita or in Srimad Bhagavatam. If we hear the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead from liberated persons, this hearing will certainly free us from the bondage of material activities, but hearing Srimad Bhagavatam spoken by a professional reciter cannot actually help us achieve liberation. Krishna Katha is very simple. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as he himself explains, Mataparaturam nanyat kinjit asti dhananjaya. Or Arjuna, there is no truth superior to me, Bhagavad Gita 7th chapter, text 7. Simply by understanding this fact, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can become a liberated person. But especially in this age, people are interested in hearing Bhagavad Gita from unscrupulous persons who depart from the simple presentation of Bhagavad Gita and distort it for their personal satisfaction. They fail to derive real benefit. There are big scholars, politicians, philosophers, and scientists who speak on Bhagavad Gita in their own polluted way. And people in general hear from them, being uninterested in hearing the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead from a devotee. A devotee is one who has no other motive for reciting Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam than to serve the Lord. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has therefore advised us to hear the glories of the Lord from a realized person, Bhagavata Paro Dhyā Bhagavata Stane. Unless one is personally a realized soul in the science of Krishna consciousness, a neophyte should not approach him to hear about the Lord, for this is strictly forbidden by Srila Sanatana Goswami, who quotes from the Padma Purana, Vaishnava Mukodgyanam Putam Harikatam Natam Shravanam Naiva Kartavyam Sharpa Chishtam Yatha Payaha. One should avoid hearing from a person not situated in Vaishnava behavior. Vaishnava is Navritta Tirshna, that is, he has no material purpose, for his only purpose is to preach Krishna consciousness. So-called scholars, philosophers, and politicians exploit the importance of Bhagavad Gita by distorting its meaning for their own purposes. Therefore, this verse warns that Krishna Katha should be recited by a person who is Navritta Trishna. Sukadeva Goswami epitomizes the proper reciter for Srimad Bhagavatam and Pariksit Maharaj, who purposefully left his kingdom and family prior to meeting death, epitomizes the person fit to hear it. A qualified reciter of Srimad Bhagavatam gives the right medicine, bhavoshadhi, for the conditioned souls. The Krishna consciousness movement is therefore trying to train qualified preachers to recite Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita throughout the entire world, so that people in general in all parts of the world may take advantage of this movement and thus be relieved from the threefold miseries of material existence. The instructions of Bhagavad Gita and the descriptions of Srimad Bhagavatam are so pleasing that almost anyone suffering from the threefold miseries of material existence will desire to hear the glories of the Lord from these books and thus benefit on the path of liberation. Two classes of men, however, will never be interested in hearing the message of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam: those who were determined to commit suicide and those determined to kill cows and other animals for the satisfaction of their own tongues. Although such persons may make a show of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam at a Bhagavata Saptaha, this is but another creation of the karmis, who cannot derive any benefit from such a performance. The word pashugna is important in this connection. Pashugna means butcher, persons fond of performing ritualistic ceremonies for elevation to the higher planetary systems, must offer sacrifices, yajnas, for killing animals. Lord Buddhadev, therefore, rejected the authority of the Vedas because his mission was to stop animal sacrifices, which are recommended in Vedic ritualistic ceremonies. Nindasya yagya vidairaha shutiga jatam sataya vridaya dashita pashu gatam keshavadrita buddha sharira jaya jagadisha hode. That's from the Gita Govinda by Jayadev Goswami. Even though animal sacrifices are sanctioned in Vedic ceremonies, men who kill animals for such ceremonies are considered butchers. Butchers cannot be interested in Krishna consciousness, for they are already materially allured. Their only interest lies in developing comforts for the temporary body. Bhogeshvarya prashaktanam taya paritta chetasam vyavasayatmika buddhi samadho na vityate. In the minds of those who are too attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence and who are bewildered by such things, the resolute determination of devotional service to the Supreme Lord does not take place. Gita, 2nd chapter, text 44. Srila Narottama Das Thakur says, Manusha janma paya Radhakrishna na vajya janayat shunya visha kainu. Anyone who is not Krishna conscious and who therefore does not engage in the service of the Lord is also Pasugna, for he is willingly drinking poison. Such a person cannot be interested in Krishna Katha because he still has a desire for material sense gratification. He is not Nivritta Trishna. As it is said, Trivargikashte Purusha Vimukta Harimeda Saha. Those interested in Trivarga, that is in Dharma, Artha, and Kama, are religious for the sake of achieving a material position with which to gain better facilities for sense gratification. Such persons are killing themselves by willingly keeping themselves in the cycle of birth and death. They cannot be interested in Krishna consciousness. For Krishna Katha, topics about Krishna consciousness, there must be a speaker and a hearer, both of whom can be interested in Krishna consciousness if they are no longer interested in material topics. One can actually see how this attitude automatically develops in persons who are Krishna conscious. Although the devotees of the Krishna conscious movement are quite young men, we used to be quite young men. Senior citizens are quite senior citizens now. They no longer read materialistic newspapers, magazines, and internet, and so on, for they are no longer interested in such topics. Nivritta Trishna, Tarshahai. They completely give up bodily understanding of life. For topics concerning Uttama Shloka, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the spiritual mask, maybe they can close that door so I don't hear the grinding. The spiritual master speaks and the disciple hears with attention. Thank you. Unless both of them are free from material desires, they cannot be interested in the topics of Krishna consciousness. The spiritual master and disciple do not need to understand anything more than Krishna, because simply by understanding Krishna and talking about Krishna, one becomes a perfectly learned person. Yasmin vigyate sarvamevam vigyatam bhavati. The Lord sits within everyone's heart, and by the grace of the Lord, the devotee receives instructions directly from the Lord himself, who says in the Bhagavad Gita, 15th chapter, text 15, Sarvacha chaham ri sanavishto matak smriti yana bhonam cha vairaisha savaira hamri vedyo vedanta krid vedavid eva chaham. I'm seated in everyone's heart, and for me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. By all the Vedas I am to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of the Vedanta, and I am the knower of the Vedas. Krishna consciousness is so exalted that one who is perfectly situated in Krishna consciousness under the direction of the spiritual master is fully satisfied by reading Krishna Katha as found in Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and similar Vedic literatures. Since merely talking about Krishna is so pleasing, we can simply imagine how pleasing it is to render service to Krishna. When discourses on Krishna Katha take place between a liberated spiritual master and his disciple, others also sometimes take advantage of hearing these topics and also benefit. These topics are the medicine to stop the repetition of birth and death. The cycle of repeated birth and death by which one takes on different bodies again and again is called bhava or bhava roga. If anyone willingly or unwillingly hears Krishna Katha, his bhava roga, the disease of birth and death, will certainly stop. Therefore, Krishna Katha is called bhavoshadha, the remedy to stop the repetition of birth and death. Karmis or persons attached to material sense enjoyment generally cannot give up their material desires, but Krishna Katha is such a potent medicine that if one is induced to hear Krishna Kirtan, he will certainly be freed from this disease. A practical example is Dhruva Maharaj, who at the end of his tapasya was fully satisfied. When the Lord wanted to give Dhruva a benediction, Dhruva refused it. Swaman kritarto smi varam nayachi. My dear Lord, he said, I am fully satisfied. I do not ask for any benediction for material sense gratification. We actually see that even young boys and girls in the Krishna consciousness movement, and old boys and girls, have given up their long practice of bad habits like illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication, and gambling, because Krishna consciousness is so potent that it gives them full satisfaction. They are no longer interested in material sense gratification. So, Nivritta Tarsha Rupagiyamana, Bhavoshadashrodra, Mano Biramat, Kautama Shloka Gunanavada, Puman Vidajeta Vina Pashugnat. So Omagana Timadanda Shah Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Unminitam Yena Tasmai Shi Vidavena Maha. So in this verse, indirectly, you find pointed out one of the reasons for Krishna's advent. We hear many different reasons for Krishna's advent or incarnation or manifestation in this world. There's generally, what is this? Prichanaya Sananam, Vinashaya Chidushkritam. Krishna comes to establish religious principles, annihilate the miscreants, protect the devotees. And actually, Srila Prabhupada explains that Krishna doesn't have to directly come for these particular subject matters, because these subject matters can be accomplished by Krishna's devotees or Krishna's energies. I mean, Durga is certainly capable of killing the demons. And she rides on a trident, rides on a tiger, and with her trident she is piercing the demons and us too, with the threefold miseries of adiadmik, adibodhik, and adidaivik. That means miseries from the body and mind, material nature, and other living entities and devotees. So, in this way, Durga is certainly capable of that. Devotees are certainly capable of giving Krishna consciousness, you know, establishing religious principles. It's like we see Prabhupada did that. Prabhupada came and he accomplished something, actually, something from an external sense that is even more than Lord Chaitanya accomplished. He went around the world and got everybody chanting Hare Krishna in every town and village. Something that Lord Chaitanya predicted, something Lord Nityananda predicted, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur and other acharyas predicted. So, really, Krishna doesn't have to come down. These are like secondary reasons or external reasons for Krishna's advent. And then talking about internal reasons, there's the reason of Krishna's own enjoyment. You know, Krishna likes to do things that are only done in this material world, that are not done outside of this material world, things like killing demons. For example, we were talking the other day about the indirect rasas. One of them is ghastliness. In the spiritual world, there's no ghastliness. And so Krishna likes to experience that. And of course, in the spiritual world, there's some chivalry and a little bit of fear, not a tremendous amount of fear. But, you know, there's some talk of demons. Demons don't actually appear, or devotees may make believe that they're demons. But it's not really to the fullest extent. So Krishna comes down, and he even has his devotees sometimes take birth as demons, like in the case of Jaya and Vijay, which was his arrangement. What's that? You're hearing background noise.
There's some kind of music, but I don't know what it's
talking about.
I don't think it smells yours. I think it's all here, but maybe that's not.
What's nice?
Yeah, it's like a ball game or something.
I think there's a mixing board there. If you turn down the what's coming from the computer, it won't play.
Okay.
There's a little dial that says sound from the computer. And that's what takes care of that. Anyway, it's not bothering me. So Krishna comes down for his own enjoyment, because he likes to do things like these killing of the demons, and there's a lot of, you know, it's very interesting. Like the whole Mahabharata war is very interesting for Krishna. It could be accomplished otherwise. I mean, Krishna is certainly capable of killing a whole bunch of people at one time without a without him being there for the Mahabharata war. However, you know, it's just exciting. And Krishna likes to have these exciting paths. And anything that we like to do is originally present in Krishna in its pristine, pure form. I was giving a class the other day in Richmond that Krishna has all these activities, like sporting activities and everything like that. And we're also very attracted to sporting activities. Giving a class to a group of people from India, I said, you're all attached to cricket. And you watch the cricket game, and you get into it, and you start yelling and screaming like that, and you have your cricket heroes. And I even mentioned that when I was circumambulating Govardhan Hill one time, the kids were bothering me, and then I explained to them, that I was an Australian cricket player, and I circumambulated Govardhan Hill right before the cricket game, and they all offered obeisances to me and stopped bothering me. So, I mean, that's the religion of India is cricket, much more than anything else. So the Krishna enjoys those. Krishna, I'm not saying Krishna enjoys cricket. I'm saying Krishna enjoys in the same mood that we who are emulating Krishna are trying to enjoy in this world. Not really enjoy, but trying to enjoy. Like if you watch someone watching the cricket game or watching the football game or watching any of these games, which I do sometimes, I watch people. When I go through the airport, they have a sports bar. Then you see that they're actually not happy. They're getting to the same mood, you know, grimacing in their faces and everything like that. But they're not blissful. You know, they're just agitated. Whereas when Krishna does these things, he's very blissful. So Krishna enjoys everything, because everything that we have in this world is a reflection of the spiritual world, as described by Krishna in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, giving the example of the banyan tree, which is reflected in the banks of the river, and the banyan tree has its roots up in the reflection, and the branches down. And so that's the material world. So therefore, that's another reason Krishna comes. But as far as this verse is concerned, Krishna comes to actually display his real nature so we can read about him, we can hear about him. Because if Krishna didn't come, we would have to speculate, and like people accuse religious people of being what, anthropomorphic. They say that basically there was one, I think his name was Xenophanes, if I remember correctly, some pre-Socratic scholar said that if horses had God, he would look like a horse. And he made that comment that, you know, people, according to the color of their skin, they depict God with the same color of skin. So that's called anthropomorphism, where you actually project, you know, human beings project their own concept upon God. I mean, just like in generally in the Christian church, they depict God as, not God, but Jesus Christ as being blue-eyed and blonde hair. But there's no evidence that he was like that. You know, this, all the evidence is that he was Semitic. You know, he basically had a dark hair and Semitic complexion, and that's certainly not blue eyes. So, but people are projecting what they consider to be, you know, charismatic. You know, just like someone has blue eyes, they're generally considered more charismatic. You know, particular point I was thinking of getting blue contact lenses to help with my preaching. But so that's what generally people do, iconography. They project their own ideas about what God must look like, or God must look like an old man, like in the Sistine Chapel. Michelangelo depicted God reaching out to Adam, you know, and God is, you know, you see the wrinkles on his face and gray hair and everything like that. And that's not really the way God is. God is actually Navayovanam Cha, as we hear, isn't it? He's always youthful. Even in the Battle of Kurukshetra, Krishna, even though he had been on the earth 125 years, he never looked more than 16. That was it. You know, like a young boy, you know, fresh skin, no wrinkles, no gray hair, no balding spots on his head. Nothing like that. It was just like, wow, young kid. Of course, if we project our understanding, then we think he's getting old. So Krishna appears to really show us the nature of God so we can read about these particular pastimes. And hearing about that, of course, we become free from the material pangs. And of course, you may complain that I've been reading about this for the last 40 years, and I 50 years, and I'm not free from my material pangs yet. Well, the body will always have these pangs, but it's a question of, as Srila Prabhupada said, raising your consciousness so much that the pangs are considered insignificant. Mm. In other words, being absorbed in something else. So, just like Prabhupada said when he was having this spinal tap, the devotees asked Prabhupada, does it hurt? And Prabhupada said, we tolerate it, just very nonchalantly. And you see Prabhupada in the final days, where Prabhupada was basically, his body was skin and bones, and every doctor who saw him thought that he would be in extreme agony, yet he was able to dictate his Bhaktivedanta purports in a very clear frame of mind. I mean, in the past, myself, even when I've had a little toothache, I can't really think enough to give class. It's just like, oh my God, how can I speak in front of these people? But Prabhupada, you know, because he was absorbed in Krishna. And the body was doing whatever the body was doing, but he was absorbed in Krishna out of love. Just like if someone loves someone so much, even in the material world, they can do things. There's stories of one time there was a child trapped under a car, and the mother actually lifted the car. And, you know, can you lift a car? I can't lift a car, even a portion of the car, because it's love. So if someone loves Krishna so much, even though the material body is there, you're no longer identifying. You're identifying with your internal relationship with Krishna. So that's how the material miseries become overcome. So we're not at that stage. Now, why are we not at that stage? We're not at that stage because we're self-centered, and the manifestation of that self-centeredness is called anarthas, unwanted things, you know, like lust, anger, greed, illusion, envy, fear, all these things that are actually keeping us from enjoying Krishna consciousness. So, therefore, now we're going to speak, as we usually do on Janmasthami, about how Krishna instructs us to get rid of the anarthas by killing demons. Because actually, the demon is within. As they say, I've seen the enemy, and the enemy is us. You know, so generally, because we're not really on the platform of pure devotional service, we consider other people to be enemies, we hate people. And of course, a devotee is Ajapta Kshatravat, as described by Lord Kapiladeva in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. He gives the qualities of a devotee. He says that Tatikshava Kurunika Sudha Sarvadehinam Ajapta Kshatravat Shanta Sadhava Sadhabhushana, the ornaments of a Vaishnava, one of them, we're not going to talk about all the ornaments, is that a devotee has no enemy. And of course, Yudhisthira Maharaj is also called Ajata Shatru, means the person who has no enemy. So, but the enemy is actually these things, like the demons. These are actually demons. I mean, and where do the demons reside? In the mind and in the intelligence. Krishna says this, you know, that lust, anger, greed, all these reside in the mind and intelligence, you know, the subtle body. The demons don't reside in the gross body. They reside in the subtle body. You can say, well, my body is demoniac. Your body is not demoniac. It's just a machine, yantra. Krishna says in the Gita, yantra vritani maya, that the body is a machine, so the contamination is in the heart, or not in the pure soul. Not that pure soul is never contaminated, but it's the covering. It's like a filter that covers the light, that you see the light in different, even though the light is white and bright and brilliant, and you see it with different colors, because you're looking at the world, as they say, with rose-colored glasses or different glasses. So you're actually perceiving things through the medium of the subtle body. And of course, mind, intelligence, false ego. And in this way, Krishna consciousness means to cleanse the subtle body. But by the chanting, we understand that. But also, one has to be introspective to see the demons when they come out. It's not to say, I'm just chanting. You have to be able to identify. That's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur really goes through this description in the Chaitanya Shikshamrita of the different demons that Krishna killed in his pastimes, and correlating them with anarthas in the heart, or impediments, not only anarthas, impediments, or people who are just like against Krishna consciousness. I mean, he starts out, Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur comments on the Chaitanya Shikshamrita. There's a beautiful commentary on that. And he talks about these different demons. Of course, the first demon we come in contact with is Kamsa. And Kamsa And we have a little bit of this in our own hearts, a little Kamsa in our own hearts. You know, Kamsa, of course, was the one who tried to kill Devaki, you know, because he was afraid the eighth son of Devaki was going to kill him, which is actually what happened. He was right. So, he wasn't wrong about everything, but he was right about that. His strategy was wrong because his strategy caused it to happen, actually. Had he not done that, of course it was Krishna's pastimes, then he wouldn't have been killed. So, Kamsa actually represents empiricism. You know, empiricism, what does empiricism mean? That, you know, you have to see something, be able to measure it, or use your scientific measure, instruments to measure it. That's the empirical approach, you know, seeing is believing. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says he represents aggressive empiricism that likes to suppress the truth before it appears. Of course, the truth is Krishna. Then Krishna's going to appear. So we have like all these atheistic scientists, not real scientists, you know, atheistic scientists, that are trying to talk about something that is not within their realm of experience or ability to measure. You know, oftentimes we give this example that if you want to measure the temperature, then you don't use a sound meter to measure the temperature. It's a specific instrument that you use to measure a specific phenomenon in this material world. So to measure consciousness, you don't use your scientific measure, your empirical or your gross scientific instruments. You measure consciousness with consciousness. You know, there's a different method. And we understand what is beyond matter from the descending process, not the ascending process. Of course, this is a very simple Krishna consciousness 101. So Kamsa actually represents this empiricism. And then, this is an explanation given by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. As soon as Krishna consciousness appears, as soon as Krishna appears, then the next demon appears, and that, of course, is Putana, who represents the pseudo-teachers of religion. In other words, bogus gurus, bogus teachers, bogus priests. I'm not saying everybody outside of the Krishna consciousness movement is bogus, but 99.99% are bogus. I mean, like Prabhupada said during the 1960s, practically there's a god coming from India every week. So, you know, Putana represents, you know, trying to kill religion when it actually appears. And we actually, another way we see this is this, you know, this is going to be a little controversial, this whole kirtan movement where you have people who are Mayavadis and personalists, not only chanting Hare Krishna, but they're chanting, you know, practically anything they can get their hands on in the name of kirtan. Gayatri mantra, they chant the Gayatri mantra, you know, first the Brahma Gayatri. And it's sort of covering, and devotees sometimes become enamored with this and even listen to these kirtans. And this is like Putana. This is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says. Of course, he doesn't talk about modern kirtan movement because that didn't occur. But even in Bengal, they had this. Like, when I was with Prabhupada one time, and they had these professional kirtan singers come up on the stage in Mayapur during the Gaur Purnima festival. And they were in a kirtan competition. You know, who could play the drums better? And they play the drums quite well there. They can make the drums chant Hare Krishna, you know, quite expert with that. And Prabhupada said, get them out of here. Prabhupada said, we're not interested in professional kirtan performance. So that's like Putana. You know, trying to kill, think about this, you know, the example, trying to kill the transcendental child. This is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's words. As soon as he's born and he falls into the hands of Putana. And he says, this is a direct quote, the attempted success of Putana over the genuine spiritual teachers is aided by the efforts of organized religion, which is atheism in the garb of theism. And then he says, this heavy stuff, organized religion, and of course he's not talking about ISKCON. I mean, because you need to organize, but he's talking... You know, he cautions, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur cautions, as he says, never was there a time when the spirit of religion was not destroyed by an institution. Of course, We must start an institution, but we have to have the checks and balances so it doesn't become, you know, either ritualistic or just rules and regulations, or, you know, like a, you have some big acharya who speaks like whatever he says is actually true, even though it goes against Shastra. You know, you have this in certain other religious organizations when he speaks, anyway, ex cathedra, as they say in Latin. So this is that organized religion's attempt to force the people in general to follow certain principles without affecting any spiritual advancement of them. So it's doomed to failure. In other words, you get all this external stuff, even if it's well-meaning, but you become like the clone army in some movie, which we'll mention. Become little clonies, and you don't internalize things, and you don't develop, everything is seen externally and with a bunch of rules and regulations. And he says they would like to improve materialism through their religion, so they enlist the aid of Putanas. He puts that in the plural of this particular point. But Putana cannot be successful once real religion has actually appeared. And the final statement, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, is that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta concludes by saying, the effective silencing of the whole race of pseudo-teachers of religion is the first indication of the appearance of the Absolute on the mundane plane. In other words, Putana being killed, or as Prabhupada was challenging, you know, the atheist and empiricists were represented by, of course, Kamsa, Prabhupada was challenging. That is the business, like Nirvishesha Shunyavadi. I mean, that's all Putana stuff. Nirvishesha Shunyavadi is Putana. And, you know, sometimes we become very sentimental and we hang out with these people. But actually, it's harder to convince, it's almost impossible, to convince a dyed-in-the-wool Mayavadi about God, about, you know, personality of God, than it is to convince an absolute materialist who's just like groveling in the mud. That's been my experience. You know, sometimes people say, well, that's a low-hanging fruit. Well, that fruit may be low-hanging, but it's attached to the tree with iron. So it's not really practical. Anyway, that's been my experience. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the bona fide teacher of the Absolute, heralds the event by Krishna by his uncompromising campaign against the pseudo-teachers of religion. He says, uncompromising. What does uncompromising mean? He's cutting technique, like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He's a cutting technique. And even his own disciples criticized him for that. And Prabhupada said those disciples fell down. So that's what Putana represents. And that's a real inert in our own hearts because, you know, basically, let's say coming from my own scientific background, you know, that was how I trained up, then I tend to think, well, it says this in the Bhagavatam, or it says this, well, the scientists, you know, we've done this, you know, what's happening here? You know, so it can create doubts in the mind when we contrast observable phenomena, which is empiricism, with what's there in the Bhagavatam. We have to understand the Bhagavatam, we have to have spiritual vision. We got some angels coming from the heavenly planets now. just like Prabhupada said, when the devotees were attempting to draw diagrams depicting the description of the universe in the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada kept looking and said, you don't understand anything, you're just looking at it from material vision. So it's interesting, you can't understand these things, Takshi Krishna Namadi, Nabhavet Graham India. You cannot understand these things with your mundane senses. Anyway, so as far as Putin is concerned, I wanted to get through a few more demons. In her last life, she had a very interesting experience. She was Ratnamala. She was the sister of Bali Maharaj. And what happened... Give me a second to clear up my throat, my material throat. What happened is that when Bali Maharaj was cheated by Lord Vamanadeva, she got very angry at Lord Vamanadeva. Previously to that, she had a maternal affection towards Lord Vamanadeva and thought, I'd like to be his mother. And then after that, she got very angry because he cheated my brother but I'll kill him. And therefore, she took birth as Putana. And as Putana, she got a chance to try to kill Krishna, which was unsuccessful. But because Krishna saw the good part, that's another point. Krishna saw the good part and he ignored the bad part, or he purified the bad part. And even he purified her so much that her body smelled like fragrant. It was 8 miles long, incense stick, basically. when they burned it, you understand? It's like it smelled, the whole area of Braj was fragrant with beautiful, like sandalwood and musk and everything like that. So even though she was so demoniac, Krishna purified her to such an extent that the cremation was like an ecstatic affair, you know, made everything smell good. So that's the first demon. The second demon is also, you know, that also can be reflected in our own hearts. It's a sort of a mode of ignorance type of demon. He's called the Shakatasura demon, described as the cart demon. Actually, he had a subtle body, and he was like around the cart, and he was the one who caused the cart to fall. So although he wasn't a cart, he was sort of like inhabiting the cart. So this particular demon is like something that we all experience, lethargy, you know, bad habits, trying to put off for tomorrow what we can do today. And it's all these bad habits we've accumulated in this lifetime. You know, sometimes we say to someone about habits, now it's time to change. Well, just one more day of my bad habits, and tomorrow I'll change. You see this all the time. But habits need to be changed right away. Just like if someone's addicted to alcohol, you understand, don't take another drop, because if you take another drop, you'll just get back into your own habits. So to break a habit, you have to be cold turkey and not go back to your habits. So we get into these bad habits, we're lethargic and dull, and we have to conquer that. Prabhupada said you conquer that by rising up. Conquer sleep by rising up, jumping up in the morning. And Prabhupada said, quoting Chanaka Pandit, we should sleep like a dog. Now, what does that mean? It doesn't mean so many hours a day like a dog, because a dog can sleep, you know, something like 14 hours a day. But that means when a dog hears the slightest noise, what does it do? Immediately wakes up. You never see a dog wiping its paw, you know, wiping his eyes with his paws like that. You ever see a dog get up and go, huh, where am I? Dog immediately gets up, Hare Krishna. No, not Hare Krishna. You know, bow wow or something like that. And then he protects his master's property. Prabhupada also said that GBC should be like guard dogs, guarding the philosophy of the Krishna consciousness movement. So we should conquer that just by enthusiasm, utsahana. And we become enthusiastic by hearing Krishna katha. All these different demons are conquered by hearing about Krishna's pastimes. It's so encouraging, so enthusing to hear what Krishna doing all these things. I remember seeing Prabhupada listen to the recitation of the Shalva airplane story. And Prabhupada was just like cheering Krishna on. Just like someone would be at a football game, go team, go. You know, Jets or whatever. Cassettes or go team go, and Prabhupada would say, yeah, get him. You know, so when you hear these pastimes and all the pastimes, you know, it's not that we just listen to the gopis pastimes. You know, if you love Krishna, you love all the things that Krishna did or does, not just did, because his pastimes are nitya. He's doing his pastimes. Every pastime is happening somewhere in some universe and in the spiritual world simultaneously right now. So if you love Krishna, you'll love everything he does, killing the demons. It's not you say, oh, let's just go to the chapters of the Rasa Leela and hear about that. But you love everything he does. So, and that helps you overcome these anarthas. So this demon in his previous life was the son of another demon, Haranyaksha. His name was Utkacha. Whoops. Anyway, he broke some trees and was cursed to become bodiless. And the Muni, when he tried to apologize, said, then the next mantra, you will be touched by the foot of the Lord and would be liberated. So these are Maybe we should continue in the next few days about hearing these pastimes. And, I mean, it's actually really important, these descriptions from the Chaitanya Charitamrita and Bhaktivinoda Thakur's, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's commentary on the